Welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review. We're a couple of minutes late, and that is actually my fault for sending out the links to join late, because I had to re-sign in to everything, which was stressful. My apologies. However, I am blaming Tim for no apparent reason, other than nothing is ever my fault. So this is down to you, Tim, down to you. And we're live tonight on Rumble, Odyssey, and not DLive. You might have noticed for the first time, we're not live on DLive, and that's because DLive is officially shutting down, which is probably not a shock. And I might talk a little bit to Tim about this. People have been asking me, should they send me their diamonds or lemons? They're called diamonds now. And if you want, but they're not letting people cash them out. If people send you, I've got loads of these diamond things that people have sent you, but DLive aren't letting you cash them out. So, you know, not very helpful. Apparently you can send coins there. If you've got coins, feel free to send me them and I'll cash those out. But apparently they're not going to be letting anyone cash the diamonds out or convert them to coins. So basically it's just, it is what it is. Anyway, getting that out of the way, please do spread the word. Odyssey and Rumble are the only places to be now, and I will not stream on DLive in the future. And I think within 30 days, it will be gone anyway. So that's a little bit of an update. Please do share the stream. Please do share the Odyssey and Rumble links. That would be very helpful. I've got some streams and things coming up later in the week. It's been a pretty busy week for me this week. As many of you will have known already, I started a Substack. On Monday, I appeared with Dr. Patrick Slattery on his show. I've shared the link to that on my Telegram and Gab. On Tuesday, I published a Substack article about the Southport inquiry that's just been published. And I also added to that a historical article I published about the Southport cover-up. So there's a new article on my Substack. Please do sub me over there if you can. Everything's free over there. Today, I'm here with Tim. Tomorrow, I'm live with David Duke. Friday, I've got a special stream about snitches in nationalism, the SPLC, and how so many movements are infiltrated by people being paid by groups like the SPLC, and how I warned everyone about this. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my historical knowledge of this and a little bit about moles in nationalism in the UK who were working for groups like Hope Not Hate and Searchlight magazine, and really how to guard against that. So that's going to be an interesting stream. And I think it's something that I will have a unique perspective on that many newcomers to the movement wouldn't. So check that out on Friday. Saturday, I'm actually having a day off. So there's a rare Mark Collett not doing any work day. And then Sunday, we're back with the book club and we're reviewing Sam Melia's book, Legal, Truthful, Guilty. So you can see that I'm doing, in fact, Saturday isn't a day off. I lied. Saturday, I will have a second Substack article out this week, which is titled, and this is a completely brand new one. It's titled, Jewish Lawmaker Aims to Silence Criticism of Israel in France. So that's a new article. So my Substack is now going to have two articles published every week. One will be a historical article of interest, which will now be in written form on the Substack. And at the end of the week, there will be a completely fresh article. And any historical article that needs modern amendments will also be improved. So I'm doing more work than ever. And my output has increased now so that each week I will be doing at least five streams and two published articles. So basically, that's all for free, which takes me on to the next thing. All of that work is free. Nothing that I do goes behind a paywall. Nothing is subscriber only. So if you do appreciate all of that, you do appreciate the deep analysis, the streams, the guest streams, all the things I do, please consider giving a small donation. $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. And if you're watching on replay, you can donate at any time through Entropy. The places to donate are Entropy and Rumble, and it is massively appreciated. If you give something, please, please, thousands of people watch these shows. Over the course of about a week, I get around 50,000 views altogether on the platforms that I'm on. That's across all the shows that I do. But of those people, very few donate. Very few people actually choose to give something. If you can, please do give something, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. And if you can be more generous, please do, because otherwise I can't afford to keep doing this. I say this every week, the same people donate. I really appreciate it. But if you can give something, I would be very, very grateful. You can also donate via crypto. And as always, one of the other jobs I do is help people within the movement. And if you do need help, if you do need to reach out to me, you can contact me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Sorry for the slightly longer intro, but I wanted to talk about DLive going down. We've got Tim Murdoch with me tonight. I'm really happy to have him here. He's somebody I consider as not only one of the most level-headed commentators in the whole movement, but somebody who has been around for a very long time. He has a wealth of information. I also classify him as a friend. He's someone that doesn't involve himself in petty drama, mudslinging. He's willing to work with everyone as long as those people are pushing in the right direction. And he's someone that I can't praise highly enough for his consistency. Come rain or shine, this guy is putting out quality content, interviewing the best nationalist minds and speakers from all over the world, and he never hesitates to help people out, to promote their work, and to push people's fundraisers when they're jailed or facing financial hardship. He's a real selfless warrior, and we are so lucky to have people like him in the movement. Tim, it's been a while since you've been on PWR, too long. How have you been, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's very nice where I'm at. Spring is here. My allergies are going a little crazy, so hopefully I don't sneeze. But if I have to duck my head, I'm sure the chat can understand. I'll try not to sneeze into the mic. But anyways, I just put up an article of yours on Europa. I can post on a site. It's a news collator called Europa.com. And I posted the article, and I was going to ask you about Substack, because we're developing a list of Substack. There's a lot of nationalists that do post on Substack in the West. One of the challenges is a percentage of the articles are, and I don't have a problem with this, are paywalled, because they have to make money somehow. And so I do like the fact that the articles, I can access them and post them. So that's, I plan on posting every single one you do, actually. Very level-headed, very good
articles. Thank you so much. And I've done five so far. I've done Jewish ambulances matter more than white lives, migrant criminality, mental health and lenient sentencing, what the Hungarian elections mean for the anti-migrant movement, Zelensky's new anti-Semitism laws, why are nationalists still fighting for him, and Southport killings, a multi-agency failure and establishment cover-up. So I've covered a variety of topics already. Everything is going to be free, Tim. I can't stress this enough.
Yeah, I know. That's how you do that. Not everyone can. I mean, there are a lot of great writers out there that use Substack, and it's like you want to, in a variety of different topics, there's a lot of great stuff on there. But unfortunately, a lot of it you just can't run because it's paywall, so it's kind of funny. But your stuff is always free, so you guys make sure to pony up support for Mark.
Well, I intend to keep it that way, and I want to just –
Are these articles, because the article kind of reminds me of an article version of your videos. So are they kind of, are you writing them, or are you AI converting videos?
No. Curious. Right. Okay. I want to be really clear about this. In October of this year, I will have done 10 years of consistent broadcasting on the internet. So 10 years of videos and these shows, which is a long time to be doing this. And to do it consistently without breaks, I have never, ever missed. I've missed one episode of PWR, which was when I was trapped in Mexico, thanks to the NJP conference cock-up. but, you know, sometimes you're just trapped in the most dangerous city in the world. I've only ever missed one episode of PWR. We do suspend things when they're on Christmas Day or Boxing Day. And every Friday, without fail, unless it's Christmas Day or Boxing Day. And some Christmas days I've pre-recorded things and done Christmas messages even. So that's how dedicated I am. I don't miss shows. So my Substack, everything written for my Substack is written solely by me, is not written by AI. However, some of the articles, while I'm committing to two a week, are old, timeless articles that were scripts for videos that I wrote that are still relevant to this day. So things like the Jewish role in the porn industry, things such as the script for one of my most famous videos, which was the JQ in under 4 minutes things like that will go up on there and be drip fed. Now, some of those articles may have aged well, but not quite well enough. And the ones that haven't aged well enough, I will alter. The article that's published every Friday and or Saturday is completely new, written by me and me alone. I don't use AI to do it. I simply do what I've always done. I Google things, look up sources, and write the article. So by doing that, I can get two articles out a week, as well as keep my streaming schedule and guest appearances. And anyone that goes over there or shares them, it will be really, really appreciated. And again, nothing is, I don't charge for anything, not even my book, even that's free to download. So that's a lot of work. And I struggle. I say to anyone, if anyone can find someone who works that hard, publishes that much material in a single week, all original stuff, you know, well, donate to them as well. But make sure you donate something to me, because I'm working extremely hard to get all this stuff out. Anyway, I really appreciate the fact you're sharing my Stubsack. And after this, I'll give you, I'll be very kind to you when you finish this, and tell just how much I love you when we're in the privacy of the green room.
I mean, you can go one step further. If you have Substack of other European nationalists that are, well, I'm trying to develop a list, even if like part of their stuff is paywall, but part of it isn't, that's fine. We're trying to develop a list. And I mean, articles, because a lot of guys, there's a lot of podcasts on there, and these are just, we're just interested in articles. Other stuff is fine, of course, but that's what I'm interested in developing a list for.
Well, I will. I'll help you out with that.
Now, Substack is the new website. It's the new like website of the like nationalist scene. Instead of having your own website, everyone has Substacks.
Well, I'm hoping that it will develop, and people used to like my videos. But just say one last thing on this. Those videos were taking me like the best part of a week to produce, and by the time they were coming out, they were a little bit behind the curve. So hopefully this will give me the time to produce more content and get it out in a more timely fashion as well, and in a more digestible fashion, because Substack allows you to read it, but it also has a reader at the bottom of the page which will read it to you if you want to listen. Anyway, we've got loads of things to talk about tonight. Now, one of the first things I want to talk about tonight is the issue that's going on in Lebanon at the moment. Israel is essentially out of control. They're waging war on multiple fronts. They're persecuting people. They're killing people. But for a long time, I've always felt one of the biggest problems we've got in the West, and I don't extend this to all Christians, but I call this problem the problem of Zionist Christians. These Zionist Christians who raise money for Israel, shill for Israel, go round, you know, spreading the word that Israel are the heroes and at the same time the victims in all of this. How do you think they're going to feel when they see Israeli soldiers smashing statues of Jesus? Because for a long time, people like yourself, me, and those in the wider nationalist movement have said that Israel and many Jews despise Christianity, look down on Jesus. There's many, many Talmudic passages that talk about how much Jews hate Jesus and how they see Jesus in a very, very, what we can say, bad light. I mean, they say things about him that I'm not going to repeat here. I'm sure most people in the chat will know the passages I'm talking about that refer to the bodily substances that apparently Jesus is being boiled alive in perpetually, according to these, you know, rabbinic writings. But most of these Zionist Christians either don't know about this or refuse to hear it. But when you actually see a statue of Jesus in a country which we're told is like this Islamic extremist country, which is not, you know, Lebanon is quite secular, they protect Christian minorities, and you see, you know, a Jewish war criminal with a sledgehammer smashing this statue of Jesus, do you think this is the kind of thing that will finally get through to these Christian Zionists?
I maybe some young ones, but the young ones are going to be influenced by various different arguments on the internet and overall Israeli action in general. News events like this are very big. Me and you pick it up, and run with it and know about it. But there's been a series of various different events involving spitting on Christians in Israel, going back years, decades even. There's been all kinds of different incidents at historic Christian places in Jerusalem and others involving Israeli security services going back decades. And that doesn't seem to have affected things. The control of Hollywood and the control of media narratives in the latter half of the 20th century allowed them to roll out various different variations of Jesus. You know, there just simply is in America maybe hundreds or thousands of different versions of Jesus, many of them manufactured out of Hollywood. Let's say the liberal Jesus. Let me give you an example. And so I think that that's kind of what they lean on, that there's so many different Jesuses out there that they've been able to modify this image and create this image over the decades, as well as maybe even centuries, various different versions of this particular character. So I think that plays to their advantage. On the other hand, their actions are so aggressive that more people are reading the Israeli press and more information is getting out when events like this happen. So busting a statue of Jesus, Israeli soldiers caught on tape or video or what was it, camera, because they're stupid enough to take pictures of themselves. And the reason they're doing that is because there's really no fear of of repercussions for tormenting Christians or messing with Christmas trees, any of the things that they do consistently in Israel. So Israel, of course, arrested them, but I'd be curious to see exactly what happens to them. They're always somewhat worried about.
Apparently, image. He was sentenced. One of them, and one of them alone, was sentenced to 30 days.
Yeah, that's these are like slaps on the wrist. But again, it is a Jewish state. They don't particularly care for Jesus. They have this love-hate relationship, depending on, you know, what if you have the Zionist version of Jesus, you're fine. But some other versions of Jesus, they're not going to like so much. So it just depends on what's good for them on any given day. But there are more people tuning in to what the Jews are doing on any given day, especially post-October 7th, which really shocked the planet, this reaction. The Iran war, of course, is shocking the planet. The Israeli actions in Lebanon, South Lebanon, go to further shock the planet. The number of journalists they've killed is shocking. There's more and more people picking up on things that 20 years ago, 10 years ago, were not picking up on things. So I think this event, I think you're right, that this event will be further have people looking at this narrative that these people are not the hugs and cupcakes you think that they're presenting themselves as.
You see, I find all this quite interesting because somebody's just put in the chat, even Nigel Farage has stopped calling himself a Judeo-Christian now. And although some of these politicians are still obviously supporting Israel and still obviously on board, they are gently backing away. I'll give you a great example. At the beginning of the conflict with Iran, Nigel Farage was all in with Donald Trump. However, he's now backed away from that and changed tact. And I do believe we are seeing a genuine sea change. Now, it's not the sea change that we want. So I'm not expecting any of these politicians to start knocking on my door or requesting meetings with me to be briefed on, you know, Jewish or Israeli power. But what I am seeing is even some of the most ardent supporters of Israel starting to get a little squeamish. Now, I'm not suggesting that Nigel Farage in any way, shape or form has actually changed his opinions, but he is at least realized that it is not a popular position to take to support the conflict in Iran. Now, that in itself is a massive thing which will annoy anybody who is a Zionist. It will annoy anyone who is an ardent supporter of Israel. And I've spoken about this quite extensively, but I do think the populist movement is running itself into the ground right now. And partially, this is because of their open support for a regime which is so blatantly engaged in war crimes, genocide and human rights abuses. But now support for that regime has not only impacted their ability to afford food, jump in the car, and, you know, enjoy a few creature comforts, but this is kind of like the icing on the cake, isn't it? This is when everything is going south. This is the final spit in the eye, isn't it? This is Israel really having one of those mask off moments. And I know you said how much of this gets through. Well, when I was producing this particular graphic for the show, which actually features this Jewish war criminal with his sledgehammer, I found these pictures on major mainstream news sites. Now, I would say that in my time in nationalism, I've always found when there's something that's critical of Israel, or when there's something that paints Israel in a particularly poor light, you'll find it all over sites like 4chan. People will be trying to meme it on sites like Twitter or a Telegram, but it very rarely breaks into the mainstream. But something that I have noticed, probably over the last 6 months, is that we are seeing somewhat of a mainstreaming of issues like this or actions like this. And another one that happened just a few days ago was the front cover of the Italian magazine, which showed that Jewish soldier, member of the IDF, grinning and mocking the Muslim lady. And Israel went crazy about that being published, calling it an act of anti-Semitism to publish the picture. I mean, I've never seen anything like this before. Have you ever seen the mainstream media and the actual sort of legacy press print pictures and articles like this?
No, not quite like this, but we have seen it regarding southern Lebanon. We have seen it regarding especially the situation in Gaza. We've seen more and more people, more and more elements of the mainstream press forced to pick up on things that at one time I think they were pretty much sequestered from, or like, you know, Jewish elites running the media would not allow these critical views of Israel. That is, it's no longer verboten. It is now open season. And so I think anytime something happens in Israel, anytime an event like this happens, it is going to go out far and wide. And that's what we've seen on social media. And like you pointed out, across the board. But that seems to be the big opener for that was October 7th in my mind. I mean, it's been that way in our circles and in certain online circles, creeping up to more and more the David Dukes, the Dr. Kevin McDonalds, so on and so forth. Over the years, we've seen this topic breach the mainstream and been in and around the mainstream with the growth of the internet. But now, of course, the floodgates are open, so they're not going to be able to do something like this and just not get wrung out over it. And in this case, of course, they said, you know, the Israeli state went out of its way to say that, you know, these are lone warriors, these are exceptions, they're going to be punished, so on and so forth, et cetera.
And the interesting thing is, this comes on the back of, obviously, this incredible death toll in Gaza, which has now risen to over 72,000 people killed, with another 14,000 people missing, presumed dead. I mean, at this point, I would say Jews have gone from being seen as a victim group to being seen as a persecutor group, as being seen as the aggressor. And they've done this very, very quickly, because on October the 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, it was sort of this watershed moment. And I would have said the average boomer, the average politician, the average sort of Joe on the street who was sort of politically sensitive would have heard about that and in some way sympathized with Israel. But any goodwill they seem to have got from this, it's almost like they've cashed in all their chips, isn't it? They've cashed in all those goodwill chips and they're on a rampage right now. And obviously, heading into the midterms in America, and for us in the UK, heading towards council elections in a couple of weeks, do you think these issues are going to have an effect on the voter in America? Because I'll say this, I think your average American voter is going to, if they're a Republican, I think increasing, and I've said this before in other streams, people rarely jump to other parties. And in America, they virtually never change which party they vote for. How they decide what they're going to do is based around, do they go out and vote for the party they support, or do they sit at home? So what I think is going to happen at the next midterms is the Democrats will turn out in force, but many people who voted Trump, many people who voted Republican, I don't think they're going to switch to Democrat, but I think they will sit on their hands. I think they'll stay at home and their protest will be not going out to vote. And really, that's what granted Keir Starmer a record majority at the last general election here in England. He actually got fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn did at the previous general election, and Jeremy Corbyn was seen as this great failure. But enough Tory party voters who had voted for Boris Johnson previously sat on their hands, refused to go out and vote, and it granted Labour a record win. I think that's going to be the fate of the Republican Party this November, unless something changes dramatically.
I think it's a good prediction. You know, it's bad when Rahm Emanuel, who, you know, he's this big Democrat operative, very Jewish, very big Israel supporter, basically on Real Time with Bill Maher, came out of his way to say all fundings for support should be deleted. We can't support Israel anymore. They have to go alone. They have to be treated like every other country. Now, he doesn't actually believe that, probably. Why would he? Why would he believe that? This is like some kind of op, but the fact that he had to do that on a show like that as a Democrat tells you where the voters are at when it comes to support of Israel. And there's a lot of people questioning that, period, that weren't questioning it 5 years ago or even 6 months ago. It's an avalanche type of effect. We're in a prime position to understand it, in so much that we understand the history of the reaction to Jewish power. Once they're in power, they go too far and there's a giant reaction against it. We understand that from a historical process because we have great writers that came about way ahead of us that we're aware of to explain it over and over again. And so they're going to try to get ahead of it. Now, who believes them? This is the problem for the Rahm Emanuels. No one's going to trust him. As soon as they hear he's Jewish and they look back at his past statements, no one's going to trust these people. And that's the problem for the American voter in general, is there's very low trust on the right or the left, I would say. But the Republicans and Trump are likely to get slammed. I think that's kind of obvious. And that's mostly, I would say, due to the Iran debacle, which is a debacle.
As the Iran situation goes on, I mean, this is another major issue that I wanted to discuss with you today. I've got to say, Trump looks weaker by the day. Weaker by the day. And this latest flip-flop from him, where one day he's calling for these mass bombings. The next day, he's saying we need more time to discuss things. The next day, he's like, well, look, you know, the strait is open. No, it's closed again. But I'm the one in charge of the blockade. He does look crazy. He does look out of control. And I think one thing that always struck me with Trump throughout his campaign for his second term, and at the very beginning of his second term, he built this strongman image. And people often said that the thing that won him the election was when there was the assassination attempt and it hit his ear. And rather than cowering, he got up and he punched the air as his security tried to pull him to the ground. And he was defiant and he gave this sort of strongman image. You know, it was a complete contrast to Biden, who at the time was on his way out and wasn't allowed to stand for a second term. And Trump seemed, for an old guy, to sort of be full of vigor, to know what he was doing. He was in charge. He was credible. He was strong. He was virile. He was a man's man. He was a leader. And he sort of carried that through up until Venezuela. But Iran seems to have been this stumbling block for him. It seems to have been this point where the first time he's got resistance, he's crumbled. And people often say this about bullies, don't they? That the bully that walks around the playground taking people's dinner money off them, the first time a kid stands up to him and punches him square in the jaw, that's when the mystique of the bully evaporates. He starts to roar and he never takes anyone's dinner money again. And Donald Trump at the moment does look like that. It looks as if all of the mystique around him, all of the hype, it's just evaporating and he's floundering. And not only is he floundering, but all of those around him seem to be deserting him. I mean, going in to the midterms, do you think there will be any Republicans joining the likes of Thomas Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene, as in Republicans that will stand, but do so breaking their connections with Trump and almost being like, look, we're the Republican anti-war candidates and we want to nail our colours to the mast and say, we're not with this guy?
The Israeli AIPAC, let's just call it the AIPAC, and the Israeli lobby have done a very good job of giving even their critics, you know, a lot of control. They have a lot of indirect control in so much that they'll come up with narratives like the Rahm Emanuel case, where you have someone out who looks like he's coming out against the state of Israel and sounding quite strong, although he happens to be Jewish and you should be suspect. They have a very good grasp on how to manipulate this type of thing. But I think it's going to get more and more difficult going forward. As far as who would break, I think there are so many that are on various, and I'm being conspiratorial, I can't prove this, that are on various different blackmail schemes is a feeling I've got. It really just depends. I'd be curious to see who else comes on Tom Massey. Tom Massey's not in our particular, I mean, okay, he's anti-Zionist. That's good. But, you know, there's going to be lots of anti-Semites. There's going to be lots of anti-Zionists. The question for us is who's going to be pro-white. There's definitely none of that, but I have a feeling we're going to see more and more come out as it becomes politically feasible. I just don't know what the level is of blackmail in our particular political situation, because so much is riding on the line for Israel. And when the Jews have that much riding on the line based on their history, they go all out. And it appears that they've went all out in ensuring they could get a war with Iran, which isn't going so well, you know, and these types of things. So I don't know who exactly, who would go off the reservation. Because even Ilhan Omar's, even the Rashida Tlaib's, who's like Palestinian, they can only go so far. You know, they're a lot, they can be anti-white, but they really got to watch going too far. Because you have a feeling that this, you know, this group probably has the ability to pretty much threaten anyone. But so I'm curious to see who else goes down the Tom Massey road, just the Tom Massey road, or the Marjorie Taylor Greene road. So far we haven't seen that many. It's not like you got dozens and dozens of Republicans, or even a half dozen that I can name that have jumped on that bandwagon.
Well,
I mean, is there anyone you think of that they're like, okay, I'm expecting this person to break into the anti-Zionist camp?
Not specifically, but obviously in Trump's first term, there was a lot of Republicans who were against Trump. They were sort of never Trumper Republicans for one reason or another. He seemed to unite the Republican Party going into his second term because he won Congress as a whole. He won both the House and the Senate, didn't he? He won the House of Representatives and he won the Senate and he won the presidency. So if you see America as kind of essentially at a federal level, three tiers of power, you could argue that the Supreme Court is the fourth tier. I mean, they're, you know, the judges there are appointed by presidents, and, you know, Trump technically has appointed a number of those, and they are mainly now Republican appointees. So you could argue that Trump, you know, electorally delivered all three tiers of governance to the Republicans, and, you know, they hold the fourth as well due to, you know, his position as president and his appointments. However, this could all flip in November, and it's very easy for people to be on board with a winner, isn't it? When you've got a guy who's winning, it's easy for people who are skeptical, or maybe not people who are the best friends of that guy, to sort of turn a blind eye to his failings, get on board, endorse him in some way, because it's working out for everybody. But people tend to jump off the ship as soon as it runs aground, don't they? Or as soon as it starts to take on a little water, people jump off the ship straight away. And obviously, I'm not an expert on American politics. I don't know every single you know, elected representative or anything like that. I'm not claiming to. But I didn't know if there were any sort of major fractures that you're aware of, or people who were about to jump ship. I mean, the same thing happens in the UK all the time. Look at Keir Starmer. He has been massively successful if you look at his electoral history. He took Labour to a record win over the Conservatives, you know, almost taking Labour back to 1997 with Blairite levels of control over Parliament. But a couple of years on, less than a couple of years on, in fact, and where are we? Well, he's embroiled in scandal. Numerous of his former closest allies are now going to the papers about him. There is an inquiry, which is extremely embarrassing, and increasingly people are calling for his head due to his handling of the Peter Mandelson issue. So it's amazing how quickly somebody can go from delivering this unbelievable victory to being the guy that everyone's saying, well, he needs to go. And I kind of look at Trump the same way. I just wondered if you knew of sort of any factions within the Republican Party that were going to flip and essentially try to distance themselves. Because the other thing you've got to take into account, or I take into account, is selfishness. Trump has only got two terms.
Let me give you an example, and the audience an example, of a conspiracy that I believe is probably true. Kristi Noem is someone that you can look her up. She was in the Trump administration. She was one of these big showboats, the head of DHS. She was the governor of South Dakota. Pretty sure it's South Dakota, not North Dakota. But the one of the governor of Dakota, she was, you know, widely paraded around as, you know, this great patriotic MAGA woman. And so she was promoted into DHS. But even in the Dakota, where she was governor, she let in a lot of tranny stuff. And people were sex change for kids and that type of thing. She wasn't as hard on it as normally you would be, someone looking for to make moves in MAGA. So it was always thought that someone probably, you know, she's another establishment character, another one they have the goods on. And no sooner she basically shoots off her mouth that she doesn't think that America should send in troops to Iran, right? She shoots her mouth off in public. You can look it up. And no sooner than she does that, this information comes out about her husband has this weird kink and he wants to be a woman and all this crazy stuff that has apparently been known for years and hidden automatically comes out. Now, most people aren't connecting the two, but I am, because I think there's plans to already send in troops, American troops, because there's no other way. And no sooner than someone like that shoots off her mouth and goes off the reservation, maybe she wasn't thinking it through, maybe it's her real thought, who in the hell knows? But they remind her who owns her and who owns people like her and what will happen to their families if they go off the reservation. Now, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think that's the whole of freaking Congress, the whole of the Republican Party, and most of the Democrats, if not all. You know, maybe not Tom Massey, maybe not MTJ, But you get the picture. That's what I think is going on, that they make an example out of people. All the rags in London were carrying pictures of her husband wearing these giant fake breasts. It was really surreal. And it's like Laura Loomer's like, yeah, everyone knew this like for years. That's why, you know, Christy has another boyfriend. And like, this is the state of American politics. But the message I think was being sent is like, you know, this is the narrative. If you go off the reservation of what we need done, this is what's going to happen to you. And she's still in the administration. She was demoted. But I think that embarrassing moment where she was made an example of, I think that's the type of thing that all these particular guys worry about and gals, because they all have skeletons in the closet, or they wouldn't be in that position to begin with, just like Christy. No, that's my opinion. I can't prove that, but I'd be willing to wager lots of money on that. I hope for more Tom Massey's, for like, we always hope for someone to come out with some strong moral position and to do the right thing. But I have a feeling that the Christy Gnomes, that the, okay, you know, I think she's probably naive, thought she could shoot off her mouth and go off the reservation a little bit, and she got reminded very quickly who runs the show.
You see, I always look at these things and I think about self-preservation. You see, Trump's only got two terms, and most of these career politicians, they want their job for life. And if there's one thing you can say about American politicians, if nothing else, they do persist for a long time. Most of these politicians intend to be riding that gravy train until they're in their 60s, 70s, or sometimes even in their 80s. And there are a lot of people who are in serious positions of power in America who are positively geriatric. Now, I'm not saying that older people can't still be sharp or can't still do a good job in the political theater, but it is something when you see that these people have persisted for so long. But you only persist for so long if you remain popular, and to remain popular you have to ensure that you don't tie your wagon to the wrong horse. Now, Trump,
yeah, there's been a series of articles, I don't know how many, I don't know when the last one was written, Washington Post, New York Times. There's been some scandals involving these geriatric members of Congress and the Senate and how many drugs they're on. The Parkinson's meds, which is scary, the dementia meds, and this type of thing. Now, I don't know specifically on how many are just props on all kinds of different meds propped up in like a Biden-esque type fashion, second term. And we don't even know what Trump's on any given day. We're just guessing. But that is another feature that I would have to point to as well. There's major structural problems in American politics, and I don't have to tell you that. But we'll see. I mean, there could be upsets. There's a reason Rahm Emanuel, who obviously wants to run in the Democratic side of the equation, is coming out as anti-Israel, is because there's a reason for it. I mean, they know the numbers. The popularity of Israel is cratering in the polls, and the younger you go, the worse it gets. So it's not looking good.
Now, the next thing I want to discuss, I want to switch topics slightly here. We've had a particularly harrowing case here in the UK, and this case has got multiple levels to it, multiple layers, should I say. Each one takes you down this sort of sickening rabbit hole, and it's about a homosexual couple that adopted a baby boy. And apparently homosexual couples, when they adopt, 85% of all homosexual couples choose to adopt boys. And I think we know where we're going with this. Have you heard about this particular case, Tim?
I think I know the specific one you're talking about, but there was one here that's very popular where you have two gay guys. They adopted a baby boy. They weren't British, but the baby boy was bouncing around asking for his mother, and they were kind of making fun of him because he has two dads, no mama. There's these videos that come out, and they're extremely disturbing, and they go viral. But you know, unless there's an actual crime involved, which there is to us. You know, this type of thing just keeps going on and on. But the British case, I believe I saw that, yes.
I mean, this is a particularly harrowing case. I'm actually looking for the latest article on it, because the Daily Mail actually had a new article about it today, but it seems to have somewhat seems to have dropped down the news feed. Interestingly enough, I wonder why that is. And this couple adopted a baby boy, and they've abused him repeatedly and murdered him. But he was murdered in the most brutal and sickening way. He was essentially choked to death by means of being orally raped. I mean, we don't have to go into any more detail than that. It's a particularly vile and heinous, a particularly vile and heinous crime. And the amazing thing
is, are they investigating child services? This type of thing usually just gets swept underneath the rug in places in Europe. Are they investigating this one all in? Is there a big outrage over this? Because I didn't get a read on even – typically, if they go to jail for something like this, they're not going to jail for long periods of time either.
Well, this is the crazy thing. The little boy was admitted to hospital on three separate occasions due to serious injuries. And the hospital discharged him on the basis that they were just normal injuries that, you know, a baby / toddler would get, you know, moving around and falling over. Well, this is the thing, isn't it? If you're a dad, you understand that when your children are learning to walk, they do a lot of falling. And there are times when your kids will have little bruises on their legs, the odd bump on their head, because they've taken a tumble. But for a child to be hospitalized on three separate occasions and covered in serious bruises and injuries, and for the hospital to discharge on all three occasions, like, look, let's take this and give the benefit of the doubt. The first time this couple come in, the first time this couple come in and the boy is injured, you could take that, couldn't you? You could say, well, look, he only came in once. He was injured. But many parents bring their kids in to hospital with a bump or a bruise. And this can be evidenced by any parent who's been to A&E on an evening. It's absolutely full of kids running around and parents trying to control the kid that they brought in because 2 hours ago he fell over and knocked himself unconscious. That does happen. You know, we've got friends actually whose child was playing. The child sat on top
it was
of
basically
a
I just put up the article for you so you know. It's basically a secondary school teacher that
Well, I was leading to this.
Sorry.
So here is the issue. You know, I know people who've taken their kids to hospital because their kids have had a fall. You know, one of our friends, their child was sat on a bollard messing around. Another kid came, pushed the child off, got a minor concussion, had to go to hospital. But if your child's in sort of 2-3 times, surely it gets harder to write off the issue. Now, the next thing that's absolutely horrific is these people, I believe, had abuse videos on their devices, so showing the child being abused. And what makes it even worse
Were they selling those videos?
I don't know. I mean, that's not come out yet. But one of the couple was actually a teacher. So you have these two homosexuals. They adopt a boy. One of them's a teacher. They're paedophiles. They're repeatedly abusing the little boy. And this is an actual picture of the little boy. You know, I'll read a bit of the article.
He's a cute kid.
What?
It's a cute kid.
Furious 13-month-old dies after repeated sexual abuse by UK men who plan to adopt him. Former teacher accused of horrific crimes against a baby he was adopting sparked outrage. Former secondary school teacher allegedly sexually assaulted and smothered. It's not smothered. Smothered is when you put a pillow over somebody's head. This was, the child was essentially choked to death via oral rape. And they filmed the child as he was dying. Preston Davey, just 13 months old, that's the same age as my son, died after being described in court as having been ill-treated, sexually abused and physically assaulted, suffering approximately 40 traumatic injuries. The case, which opened at Preston Crown Court on the 20th of April, has provoked widespread public outrage. Jamie Varley, 37, is accused of killing Preston, along with multiple other charges, including sexual assault of a child and grievous bodily harm. His partner, John McGowan Fazakerley, is accused of causing or allowing death of the child and four other offences. They deny all the charges. Preston has been born. He had been.
You know, in America, there are white families that can't have kids that would like give their right arm for a baby that cute. A white baby like this. Is it hard to adopt a baby like this in the UK?
I've never done it, so I don't know. But I just want to read this last bit. Okay. That changed rapidly. He was admitted to hospital with injuries three times in under 4 months after he began living with the defendants before his death on the 27th of July, 2023. At about 6:30 p.m. that day, he was brought to the accident and emergency department at Blackpool Victoria Hospital by the defendants, unconscious and in a state of cardiac arrest. Lancashire police were called to the hospital around 7:15 and Preston was pronounced dead shortly after. This is one of them. Well, I'm putting their face up on screen because they deserve to be outed and the pictures are everywhere anyway. But this is an absolutely shocking case. And for this poor, perfect little boy to be put with those two demons and to have been seen three times for serious injuries in 4 months and for no one to step in. I can't help but come to the conclusion that this is a case of everyone, social services, the hospital staff, and anybody else, the police, anyone else that had contact with this couple and the child, purposefully overlooking these injuries because they were homosexuals, because this is the establishment's perfect family, isn't it? This is the family that the establishment want to put on a pedestal. I mean, I can't believe that this was allowed to happen. And I think for me, the only punishment here for these two should be hanging. And I believe that that everybody involved in the process of overlooking that little boy's injuries should also face criminal charges. I mean, but this isn't dissimilar to cases that have happened in America, is it?
No, we've had some pretty crazy cases involving gays adopting. It's very difficult to adopt. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world to go through an adoption if you're a white family and want a white baby like that. So I would be curious to know how easy it is to adopt something like that or adopt a baby boy or a baby girl. It's not something I even really crossed my mind in the UK. Over here, they tend to push non-white adoption on white families, that type of thing, at the religious level and whatnot. But, you know, you'd have a lot of people that would like to have a child like that. So it is even more disturbing. It seems to be getting a lot of attention in international. It sounds like it's getting a lot of attention in the UK.
It is getting a lot of attention, but I would say it's part of a pattern. And unfortunately, the pattern isn't being identified by the media. Now, this pattern, and I've got to say, it mainly affects white children, but it doesn't exclusively affect white children, because there have been horrific cases of black adoptive parents that have tortured their children, and social services have overlooked that too, because no one in social services wanted to accuse African families of abusing their children. I think her name was Victoria Klimbe, and she was adopted by her aunt and her aunt's boyfriend or husband. I can't remember which it was. They accused the little girl of witchcraft and were doing things such as tying her up, in bin bags and barbed wire and forcing her to sleep in a bath at night. And eventually this resulted in the little girl dying. And it was a big issue at the time because social services had overlooked the abuse because the adoptive parents were African and they didn't want to seem culturally insensitive to the beliefs and attitudes of the adoptive parents. So they basically let the little girl die. Now, obviously, it does affect white people far more than it affects non-whites, in the sense that I see this as part of the overall establishment's view of child abuse. When a white child is being abused by some form of minority, so obviously we've had the grooming scandal, and here we have got another unfortunate case of homosexual couples adopting children and abusing them. And I can see here that social services, the police and the state, and in this case, which is completely unforgivable, you know, hospital staff going along with this charade because no one dares criticize a gay couple. I mean, how many children have to die on this altar of tolerance?
Yeah, gays are treated like some type of special demigods. Gays and trans, they get extreme, like, hands-off treatment for whatever reason. And it's been like that more and more. And I'm guessing the UK is way worse than America.
Well, in America, I actually remember writing a video script sometime.
I mean, America's bad enough, don't get me wrong. But I would imagine UK, because the laws make it pretty much illegal to question anything gay. You don't have free speech.
Can you remember the case in America where there was the gay couple that adopted the boys? Again, it was little boys they adopted, and for obvious reasons. And they were very, very wealthy, and they had a custom-built house. And in the house, they had actually specified for a room, and when I say an internal room, a room to be built that didn't have access to sunlight. So it's essentially like a panic room built in the house that was a fully internal room that was not bordered by any external wall. So it was completely contained in the house, no natural light coming into it, no windows. And that room, which was like the secret room, which they would have obviously said on the plans, well, this is going to be our panic room or a snug or something like that. That room was being used essentially to abuse the children, to produce horrific images and videos of the children. But the couple were also essentially pimping the children out to their gay friends. Now, that was a massive story in America at the time. But again, the plight of these little boys was overlooked because the couple were gay. I don't know if you remember that particular case.
No, there's been several in America, though, of these couples or gays adopting children. The children end up being abused. They're almost at epidemic level in the West, it seems like.
And it always makes me sort of question when we go to war with places like Iran, because somehow I can't imagine this kind of thing going on in Iran as it does here in the West. I can't imagine in Iran gay couples adopting young boys, pimping them out. And I think if anything like that did happen, and I've seen images of this, they end up hanging from cranes. And it's really strange that you have...
That's pretty normal. Like, that's how normal societies work. You've got to get rid of these mutant elements. And historically, that's what happened in the United Kingdom. That's why Great Britain was Great Britain. It's the, you end up in London Bridge if you're some weirdo. You end up hanging from a tree if you're some weirdo. This is how the West was built. And now, of course, you have all these elements in charge of us, trying to hang anything white and normal.
It is very, very depressing how things have gone. And I always find, and I'm sure it's not by coincidence, but it does seem to be children, white children, that seem to bear the unfortunate brunt of much of the multicultural madness that we see. So in the UK, we've had the grooming scandal. We've had numerous attacks on young lads, which sometimes result in those young lads dying. I remember one particular one that didn't result in death, where a young lad who was a aspiring tree surgeon had his hand hacked off by a gang of Muslim youths. They called him a white bastard as they were doing it, but it wasn't treated as a racially motivated crime. I mean, I can't imagine for one minute that white lads attacking Muslims and chopping their hands off while shouting, "You Muslim bastards," wouldn't be treated as if they'd just committed a racially motivated crime. And now you have this. It's almost as if the establishment is happy for every one of their favoured groups to prey upon the most vulnerable in our society and do so with complete immunity.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like part of the plan or something. You know, what is that famous statement? Suffer the little children?
But as a dad, I find this all particularly chilling. And when you see a little boy like this baby Preston, who sadly is not with us anymore, I look at him. You know, my son is exactly the same age, so I know what children of that age are like. I know, you know, how they play, their smiles, you know, how they light up when you, you know, you pay interest in them, when you pick them up, when you feed them something new. And as a normal functioning father, I can't imagine the mindset of people that could do something like that to a child. But nor can I imagine the mindset of people who could leave a child with people who could do something like that as a child. And I actually see this as a kind of almost religious lunacy. So tolerance and diversity is the religion of the state now. And all of those state officers, all those, you know, state workers in social services, the police, the medical profession, they were so desperate in upholding this creed of tolerance and diversity that they were happy for this beautiful little boy to be sacrificed on that altar of tolerance and diversity. And this is so alien to me. But I also, the older I get and the more I see of this, I find it harder and harder to accept that more people don't want to do something about it. I think that's something that gets to me. I mean, what have we got tonight? We've got just under 400 people watching this live, okay? And I look at this and I think to myself, how can more people not care? How can more people not be outraged? You know, and I wonder if this had happened sort of in the Victorian era, you know, the 1600s, the 1700s, the 1800s, there'd have probably been an angry mob with pitchforks and torches outside the court calling for these people, these monsters' heads. But now, you know, a significant portion of the population will probably at best just be like, well, I don't really like it, but I don't want to say anything about it because I want to preserve myself. Or they'll be, well, this was an unfortunate outlier, but we must keep pressing along with the project. We must keep going along with this to prove that it can work, because otherwise it'll prove the bigots right. And I sometimes look at this and think, how has it gone this far? And how can so few people care? How can so few people be outraged? And how can so many be happy for this to continue as it's going? And I understand that a lot of the problem is media brainwashing. I understand we've got a problem with an aggressive and largely hostile migrant community, which is growing at a pace. But some of this has got to be the fault of our own people who, for whatever reason, are happy for this to continue. And I'm not saying I feel more isolated all the time, but I do to a large degree feel more and more different from the man on the street who can turn a blind eye to this. And the older I get, maybe it's becoming a father. Maybe it's that I am getting older. Maybe I've seen too much of this kind of thing. But recently, I do feel that I'm more and more distant from normal people and their kind of blasé attitude about these kind of crimes. I don't know if that's affected you as you've grown older, Tim. I know we're a similar age, but do you feel the same way, or am I just going a little bit too soft in my old age and thinking about it too deeply?
There's so many crimes that happen on a given day that we see about, report about. Every once in a while, you come across one that'll get to you more than others. Maybe it'll be close by, or maybe because you're experiencing something similar in your life. It's just the way it goes. So I understand what you're talking about.
And on that depressing bombshell of it's just the way it goes, we'll do some super chats. If you haven't super chats,
well, I mean, you do have a son his age, so I do get it. I do get it. That type of thing will choke up anybody, you know.
But I'm not, you know. So I'm not going to speak ill of anyone. But in fact, he's not speaking of him. He's a different guy. So everyone knows Sam Melia. You know Sam Melia. Everyone in the chat knows Sam Melia. We all know Sam. He's a real sort of emotional guy. And if you've read his book, which I'm plowing through, more than two thirds through at the moment, flying through it, should have finished it sort of tomorrow or Friday. Sam is quite emotional, and he talks about this quite openly in his book. If you haven't bought it, you should have done. It's called Legal, Truthful, Guilty. And in his book, he talks quite candidly about times that he broke down in tears, times things overcame him, the amount of times in prison that he despaired, that he cried. And I'm not really like that. That's not really my sort of personality type. I'm not one who gets all emotional. I don't think any of you guys have ever seen me get emotional on a stream or sort of choke up or anything like that. But Sam does. And he's quite open about that. But as somebody who is far more stoic, and I believe that stoicism is an important part of the Western mindset, I've got to say, this case did actually sort of get under my skin a little bit. You know, and I'm not sort of ashamed to admit it, but this particular case, for whatever reason, did get under my skin. And that picture of the that little baby boy smiling, crawling towards the camera, smiling, really, really sort of got to me. And I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's the way my little boy smiles at me when he crawls across the bed, whatever it is. But that was one of the few things that sort of made me, I didn't have a full on Sam Melia moment. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm not going to, but it did get to me, and I don't know why it is. But it really did get to me, that this particular story, more so than most other things, which I feel that over the years, in many ways, I've become hardened to the horrors that our people face because I've seen so much of it. I've worked in the communities that have suffered it. You know, I understand the pain that our people go through, but I am insulated to it because I've got a thick skin. But this one, yeah, I've got to admit, it did affect me a little more than others, you know. So
understandable.
And somebody said in the chat, emotion not stoicism gets stuff done. No, right. Emotion is something you always feel. Stoicism is managing to deal with that emotion without breaking down every 5 seconds. Mastering your emotions and being able to control your feelings is an important Western archetype. You know, men who go off to war feel fear, they feel sadness, they have concerns, they have worries, but they still march off to war with a smile on their face because it's a duty. Stoicism is a means of... Stoicism doesn't mean you don't feel anything. Stoicism just means you manage to control your feelings. And that's how the West was built, with strong men managing to overcome emotion to get stuff done. Once you're ruled by your emotion, you make mistakes and you don't get stuff done. It's important. Discipline is what makes men. Stoicism is important. You have your emotions, but you master them. You don't let yourself be a slave to your feelings. Once you're a slave to your feelings, it opens the door to all kinds of ugly things. Anyway, let's do these super chats. And if you haven't super chatted, please super chat. I think it's been a good show. A little bit darker than usual. maybe. But yeah, get those super chats in. Please help me if you can. I really, really appreciate it when people do make donations, because it helps me do what I do. And if you want me to keep doing what I do, please consider funding me in some small way and don't just leave it up to the regulars. We'll start off tonight with Alcyon, who gave $100. Thank you so much. And just gave a little plus sign. Well, I can't thank you enough. And we already are in touch. And I have thanked you in person already for this because you left it the other day. It's a hangover, not from this stream, but from the Thomas Sewell stream. Anglo Papist extended his subscriber streak to 2 months for $5. Thank you so much. And Nationless Nationalist subscribed afresh for $25 a month. I can't thank you enough. And I can't thank all the subscribers enough. Thank you so much. D. Deirdrix made a 2 month subscriber streak with another $15. Thank you so much. And Open Borders for Israel gave $5 with the first question. And he said, "Hi, Mark, did you see Paul Golding is going to fight Mohammed Hijab? Would you watch it and stream it?" Oh, gosh. I've seen this is apparently on the cards that Paul Golding is going to fight this Muslim guy. And I don't really know what to make of it. Look, I'll be honest. It's a publicity stunt, isn't it? Paul Golding's not doing this for ideological reasons. He's doing it because it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be a massive payday for him. And the other guy, Mohammed Hijab, is also doing it because it's going to be a massive payday. They're going to get in the ring. It's going to be handbags at dawn. Paul used to be a fighter and used to be in quite impressive shape. He's looking a little bit older and chubbier now. Mohammed Hijab, again, he's a big guy. But, I mean, no offence, mate. You're fat. And you're also a little bit of a coward because you said you'd debate anyone and I emailed you and you ignored me. So, yeah. You're not going to debate anyone, are you, Mohammed? No, you big sack of crap. you can fight another old boy, but you can't debate the boss. So, yeah, you're a coward too. And the fact is, both of them are going to do this. They're going to make a large amount of money. I don't know who's going to win. I would expect from their form for Paul to win because Paul is an accomplished fighter. He's a kickboxer. He's a boxer. And I think when you've done that and when you've got the skills and when you've been in the ring, you don't lose those skills. Those things are things that sort of live with you. And I don't think they go away. So I think he's probably going to be in a situation where, he overcomes it. But that's if it even happens, because a lot of these things don't happen. What do you think? Have you heard about this? Have you heard that Paul Golding from Britain First is going to fight some?
No, I'm going to look it up here. I haven't heard this. But Paul Golding rings a bell, but I'm trying to put him, you know. I know that he's like, what, former MMA?
Yeah, he's done a bit of MMA. Look, he's a guy that isn't I think he's about the same age as me, so he's not going to be sort of in his prime anymore.
But so he has a professional MMA record of 2 wins and 2 losses. All right, so not a big career.
No, but he has had a couple of fights. He does know his way around the ring, and I think that he will probably be in a situation where he will overcome this guy if it happens, if it happens. I think the big issue they're probably going to have is finding a promoter or a venue that will hold it, because most of the Britain First supporters, I don't.
Oh, they're saying it's cancelled amid the Brave AI, or is this DuckDuckGo AI? I can't tell. I guess it's Brave. It's saying Paul Golding and Mohammed Hijab MMA fight cancelled amid legal and public scrutiny.
Well, there you have it. Handbags at dawn. What did I say? And remember, Mohammed, don't say you'll debate anyone when you won't dare debate me. Aunt Sally gave $5. Thank you so much. And she says, watching on catch up, loving your new Substack articles. Tim is a great follow on Substack too. It's one of my favorite media places lately. There are people there that I believe are streaming from it. I've only watched their past streams. Cheers. Well, I'm probably not going to start streaming there as well just yet, but I am going to be uploading articles. Thin Red Line gave $25. Thank you so much. And it's good to see you here again tonight. And he said, I think it'll be interesting to see how many Zionists will be voted out in the midterms, also to see if Massey and Ro Khanna will retain their seats. I think that for me is going to be the big one. Does Thomas Massey retain his seat in the midterms? What do you think, Tim? That was like a question. Do you think he's going to do it?
I'm trying to think. Have I seen Massey polls? Hold on. Let's get a number on his polls. Massey polls. Let's see how he's polling. It says he's in trouble. It's been saying he's in trouble for the past year, but you expect that when you're going against Team Zionists. Let's see here. Can Massey, Thomas Massey, leading Trump critic? I think he's going to win. We can't really trust the polls, but I think standing on moral principle, where I think he might have been in danger against AIPAC and the Zionist lobby, this is one thing that the current situation in Iran will do. It will help out guys like Thomas Massey say, you see, I told you so. You know, and that will, people that might be on the fence in a tight race are going to break in his favor. They might not agree with him on everything, but at least they'll think he's a person of principle, which is something that lacks in American politics. So I do think he'll keep a seat. Unless, of course, Israel's controlling the voting machines. Who knows? But I can't see how he doesn't keep a seat based on the debacle in Iran and him being able to say, I told you so, and, you know, we can't be supporting Israel. And I'm not some big anti-Semite or neo-Nazi. He'll go into all that stuff, but they'll vote for him.
Well, Trump has gone hard against him, and Trump has actually... You know,
Trump's not doing well, though. Trump's polling worse than Jimmy Carter. He's polling at Jimmy Carter rates at 31-32%.
Well, no, but this is exactly my point. This is exactly my point. To me, the Thomas Massey race is the indicator, it's the barometer of Trump's popularity. Because if you'd have said a couple of years ago, or if you'd have said at the very beginning of Trump's term, you know, if Trump doesn't support a Republican candidate, how do you think that will lead to their showings in the polls? You would say it'd be the kiss of death. You say Trump was basically like the Godfather, wasn't he? He either said, you're the man, you got the backing and you got in, or he basically gave you the kiss of death and that was it. You were out on your ear. You were going to die. And if you didn't capitulate to Trump and you didn't fall on your own sword, what was going to happen? We were going to get electorally humiliated. Now, I'll say this, a couple of years on, well, not quite a couple of years on, a year and a half on, and heading up to these midterms, exactly halfway through, halfway since the elections, what are we looking at? Well, we're looking at a situation now where effectively it's the opposite, where Trump giving you his endorsement and being too close to Trump might damage you. I mean, you've got to look at who is left around Trump. You know, even J.D. Vance is not pictured in close proximity with Trump as he once was. At one point, everywhere Trump went, J.D. Vance was obviously, you know, on his shoulder, at his right hand, or hovering somewhere in the background. Things are different, you know.
Yeah, Jewish Insider, and I sent you this link, AIPAC Super PAC takes aim at Thomas Massey. This is a day old with major ad buy. The ad hits Republican congressman for voting with liberal Democrats on Israel. What this looks like, it will be, is a good litmus test on whether or not AIPAC can still go the distance and just blackball a politician and make sure that they don't get elected, striking fear in the other politicians. But I would predict that Massey gets in, and I could be wrong, but I don't know that we have reliable polls, but I'll based on the Iran war debacle, that I think Massey will probably make it back in. If I were to bet, I'd bet on Massey. Because Trump's popularity is going down. He's been in opposition to Trump. AIPAC is out to get him, but AIPAC and the Jews aren't polling so well. The lower you go, the more aggressive the negative polling is, lower in age, but a lot of those young people do vote. Well, I don't know what percentage are going to vote in this election in Kentucky. So I think this could be a litmus test for AIPAC. If Tommy Massey gets back in, you might see your situation where a lot more politicians are like, fuck these guys. Sorry, I swore. Should have swore.
I mean, obviously, I don't know exactly how this is going to go, but I would definitely say that Massey being sort of the anti-Trump candidate, so to speak, may well be the thing that goes in his favor. I mean, at this point, there has to be people out there who are ready to make that protest vote against Trump, who are ready to say, we've had enough. We want to send a shot across his bowels. We don't want to be living like this. And I would say similar happened with the Conservative Party here in the UK. The Conservative Party started losing by-elections, started seeing defections. There was the rise of the Reform Party. And there was also many, many conservative voters just saying, we refuse to go to the polls and put that cross in a box for the official Conservative Party candidate. Now, I know it's a little bit different over there, but Massey breaking with Trump, hopefully this will send a message. Hopefully something will come good of this. And it would certainly make my day for him to retain his seat. One small question for you. Do you think, because I would expect Congress to swing back to the Democrats this time. And if it does, do you think
that's
there's
typically
any
chance, how it works?
Do you think there'll be any chance of an impeachment? Because I regularly stream with Dr. Patrick Slattery. He believes that there will be enough grounds for an impeachment. And with Congress back in Democrat control, they may well go for that due to the Iran war.
Trump may escalate the war if he thinks he's going to be impeached, and next thing you know, there won't be an election. Now, that would be pretty crazy, because even if they escalated the war, there should be an election. But nonetheless, that would be unprecedented for there not. I'm trying to think of all the ways he can get around that. I think there's definitely going to be talk of impeachment, 100%. The Democrats, they're going to have all kinds of things going on. But again, how much can the Israelis and the AIPACs rein in? How much can they rein in? I mean, having Rahm Emanuel and all these guys talk like they're going to do this or that, they're not going to do shit. Even the ones that are against the anti-Zionist element, what can they do with Congress so tied up? Is there going to be that big of a sea change where you're going to get like 50 or 60 Rashida Tlaibs in or Ilhan Omars that might actually pass something that's bad for the Jews? I highly doubt it. We'll have to see, though. But they might certainly get something going on Trump and put pressure on the White House. It would just be it's going to be a giant, I was going to say another cluster F of a situation is what it looks like to me, where politics is going to get very, very ugly with a president that's failing. Unless he can turn around the Iran situation. But I don't see. That's 6 months alone they've announced today to clear the Straits of Hormuz to get stuff working seamlessly again. They're bailing out Spirit Airlines, Lufthansa, and Europe is cut 20,000 flights. This isn't going good. No way around it. And people are going to blame Trump, and they're going to blame Israel for a good reason.
Well, it's interesting because they have said here in the UK on numerous occasions that we're not far off running out of jet fuel. Now, I think it would be disastrous for any Western nation to get to the point where they started grounding flights. And I think there are several, you know, people can absorb so much pain. People can absorb a certain amount of difficulty. And I think people always overestimate the trouble petrol prices cause, because yeah, petrol goes up, it makes things more difficult, it causes inflation, but petrol prices can be absorbed for a short period of time. And you know, normal people, I've heard the sort of joke where people say, well, I always put 30 quid in, and I went and put 30 quid in yesterday and it was still 30 quid, like ha ha, but yeah, you get less petrol for it. But you know what I mean. And there are workarounds for that. You know, you don't have to drive to the corner shop. You could maybe walk. But if all of a sudden flights start being grounded and the aviation industry as a whole is hit and gutted and people can't get on their holidays and businessmen can't go on their flights, I think that would cause not only far more disruption and far more visible disruption and actual anger, especially from families that have booked expensive holidays or had things booked for years. But I think it would also be symbolic. It would also be this sort of giant thing where people were like, look, this is really hurting now. An entire industry has gone down. And if Trump pushes it that far, he will be remembered, won't he, as the president that, you know, basically ran the aviation industry out of business all over the Western world.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be good. This situation is just going to get uglier and uglier based on the current trend. And his polls are going to keep crashing. Everyone that supports this type of thing is just going to get worse and worse. Now, the Democrats, what I would expect if they take over the House, and I don't see any way they won't, and the Senate, I would expect a lot of theater, but nothing will get done. There will be all these fights that they're going to impeach Trump, but they won't be able to actually do anything. There's going to be hearings, but they won't be able to do anything in the end. And that's typically what you get in American politics. It's just talk. Do they really want to impeach him? Well, if you impeach him, you're going to have J.D. Vance. And why would they want to give J.D. Vance any popularity or power? Because J.D. Vance, remember, he's been on the opposite side, at least in public, of thinking it was a bad, I think it was, Iran war is a bad idea. But that's his kind of station in life, is to be on the opposite side to save the Republicans. And if something goes sideways, he can say, yeah, it wasn't a good idea. I wouldn't have went in like that or whatever they, you know. It's kind of like Obama positioning himself against the Iraq war. Was he really against the Iraq war? No, but he's positioned that way. And so I think, I don't think they're going to want to give J.D. Vance as much power as like, okay, now you got J.D. Vance president and who knows what he can do. I'm not a fan of him, but nonetheless, this is typically how they think. So I expect more theater, MMA style theater, and but nothing to really get done or accomplished. They just lots of threats and lots of hearings and nothing happened. It's not going to be a Nixon situation.
Sad. Der Cheruska gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, good episode and good guests. Devotion, fervor, longing. Those are my pillars. We have to be the bridge to the future. Well, thank you so much. British Gammon gave $25. Thank you so much for your continued support. And said, if Trump resumed attacks on Iran and Iran used swarms of drones to disable USS Abraham Lincoln in the Strait of Hormuz, would Trump have to resign? I'm not sure if an attack is likely, but it must be possible. I've often wondered this. If Iran managed to sink a US aircraft carrier or major battleship or, you know, significant part of the US Navy in that area, do you think that would be it? Or do you think Trump would go nuclear? I mean, there's got to be a point where
I think he's already probably went nuclear in his mind. I think there's a high likelihood of there's other dangerous weapons. There's other very dangerous weapons that Iran could start using, the U.S. could start using, and I think they will roll it out if there's an invasion. I think there's a high likelihood we're going to see some type of invasion type of event. But I'm speculating. I don't know anything more than anyone else, obviously. There's highly likely that Israel uses some type of crazy weapon and Iran responds with crazy weapons. So I expect, because I know they're bringing out the lasers. They've brought in the ships with the high powered lasers. They plan on doing some kind of fancy stuff. And we know Iran is, people have slept on the Iranians over the years because they haven't jumped and did this 10 years ago. People have been sleeping on Hezbollah, but they're not, you know, these guys are ready to go. Meaning ready to fight to the death. And it appears we're on that particular road. They don't trust America. They don't trust Israel. And there's a reason for it. And plus they have not only the Arab street on their side, but they have pretty much the world on their side that they're morally correct in fighting back and not putting up with this, not just rolling over. So it's one to watch. escalation and what type of weapons are used.
So what kind of weapons do you think Iran could deploy that would be sort of more effective than what they've done already? Because I think they have been pretty effective with what they've been doing. It's certainly very nice to stay in the game.
You could have drones that set off EMPs. You could have surprise scalar, which an EMP could be like a scalar type of attack. You could have the U.S. do a similar type of thing. I'm trying to think of something that wouldn't be too crazy. I think the U.S. is going to roll out lasers shooting down drones and shooting down things with these more high-powered lasers that they have on that one particular battleship. And there's probably some more experimental laser stuff the U.S. is ready to roll out. That's been leaked. But we won't know until it happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if Iran... I do know that they have radar, and the radar they've picked up, whether it be from the Russians, the Chinese, or maybe they themselves have developed it, can pick on our planes a lot better than we think. So you might see F-35s go down. You might see a large bomber go down. You might see some surprises as far as their ability to take down planes. I think that would be a surprise. They have better radar than we estimate it, that they haven't turned on yet. They've been taking this war brilliantly in phases, and every phase they do a little bit more. But this goes back now several years in the tits for tats with Israel. And this one, they appear to be going all in, but they are rolling out their particular plans and phases. And the first phase, of course, was to start leveling the Middle East to the ground and all these quote-unquote nations that make up this Abraham Accords with Israel, targeting them as much as they've been targeting, and targeting U.S. bases effectively with their missiles and their drones, and preparing for this invasion. The next phase, I would imagine, if there's going to be any type of technological surprises that they haven't already pulled off, with just the sheer number of drones and missiles, it'll be in probably either radar or some type of drone EMP that knocks out all kinds of stuff. But I don't think they're going to do any type of drone EMP unless they get hit with an EMP of some type from the Israelis or whatever. That just basically deletes a power plant or deletes a whole section of the country's ability to produce power. Takes them back to the 15th century, as they say.
Yeah, well, Trump has obviously threatened that. You see, the issue here, as is with any other war, is fundamentally, although Americans are sort of watching this from a distance, whereas the Iranians are really feeling this, the Americans are now starting to feel the economic fallout of this. And from my perspective, I think if they also started to see the body bags really coming home, you know, big military airplanes landing and, you know, coffins draped in flags being wheeled out en masse, I don't think the American public have got the stomach for that at the moment. I mean, when that really started happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, it changed perceptions a lot. And those wars were initially very popular. I think that Bush had something like a 72% approval rating for starting Iraq 2.0, whereas Trump's approval rating was almost the exact reverse of that, around sort of 27-28% for his war in Iran. Now, when you're already that unpopular, the idea that both economic hardship coupled with bodies being flown home, I'm not sure at that point whether the populist movement would ever recover from that. And one of my worries about this, and I've talked about this with other content creators and other people on the show, but we are seeing a contraction in the populist movement at the moment, both in America and across Europe. And Trump is kind of tainting the populist movement because he's almost the international head of it. You know, people associate him with populism in every country. You know, what's your thoughts on that, Tim? Do you think that Trump dragging the world into this war and behaving in the way he is going to force some people, or get some people, to at least rethink their decisions to turn to populist movements and move away from the center? Because we've already seen a sort of return to the center in Hungary. We've seen a return to the center in Holland. At the moment, Marine Le Pen's national rally is scandalously supporting the new anti-free speech legislation that will gag people from criticizing Israel. I mean, I'm looking at this and thinking, is the anti-migration populist movement going to burn out all the goodwill it once had by supporting this war and through the actions of people like Donald Trump?
Well, right as we speak, there's been this, you mentioned you were doing a video on it earlier. There's been this indictment of the SPLC for fraud and a variety of different things. And basically the indictment says that they've been funding all these particular, they've been funding informants. The FBIC acted like its own little intelligence agency, which we've known about for a long time. And that they have informants everywhere that they're paying a lot of money to, so on and so forth over the years. And there was an indictment that came out no sooner than they came out. It hasn't even been 24 hours. Everything nonstop on X from the MAGATARD accounts, the accounts that slavishly support Trump, are running pictures and videos of Patriot Front saying the SPLC is funding these guys, the SPLC is funding groups like this. And it appears to be something that is a paid operation because it's extremely extensive. It's all about SPLC funding groups, and they show pictures of the Patriot Front, and that the SPLC, you know, all these right-wing racialist groups are all funded by the SPLC. And I think that with MAGA in trouble, and of course, Kash Patel was in trouble. I mean, The Atlantic wrote a damning article about his drinking problems. He sued The Atlantic for $250 million. It just got thrown out in the court, I believe, in the last 24 hours, if not, maybe it was this morning. I think they're doing this because the stuff about the SPLC has been known by guys like you and me for years and years. Everyone at the FBI would have known it because they work with the FBI. You know, these are not unknown quantities. They are members of the establishment. The SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, was for decades. And so the fact that this is coming out now, and that no sooner, within 24 hours, they're turning around attacking actually legitimate nationalist groups as paid informants from the SPLC as a way to, like, not attack the SPLC or attack the liberal, basically the liberal orders whose stated goal was just to destroy white nationalism in America, but they're actually attacking legitimate organizations that are organized. No sooner than they do that. And I think what the reason they're doing this is because they're going to have to recruit a lot of these particular white bread Americans to go fight a war. And so they kind of want to invalidate any type of criticism against the establishment from the right wing, which is a real threat to them over the medium to long term, whether it be the Thomas Massey or the more racialist elements that like Slattery or the David Dukes or so on and so forth. So they're going to have to discredit these organizations, and this is what they're doing. Well, they are what they do, and no sooner they're attacking over and over again. These accounts are clearly being paid to say, you know, the SPLC is funded by, or is funding the Klan, they're funding all these particular right-wing groups. Every single one of these racialist groups are all funded by the SPLC, the Patriot Front. You know, they've been on the tank, and they're basically going out of their way to discredit any type of right-wing populism to the right of Trump, which is a lot of people up and coming. They're using this report for that, not using the report as a way to, like, the SPLC was basically out to destroy all these particular groups. You know, they had informants everywhere. And by the way, the U.S. government, just so people know, the right wing, the dissident right, the pro-whites, probably in the areas of informants, are nowhere near where the government concentrated its informants, which were on the right wing militias, You have government informants all over libertarian movements. Any type of dissident, especially on the left, you're going to have all kinds of government informants. We're no different. It's just you have these private organizations with enormous budgets, the ADL and SPLC, that do not want any type of white populism, we call white nationalism in America, to take hold. The internet has been like, it's like Wall Street meeting Silicon Valley, white nationalists meeting the internet. And they've long run circles trying to control the narratives. And post October 7th, you've really had the mainstreaming of these particular mainstreaming of the Jewish question. And this is another case of our side being way ahead of the curve. All the legitimate authorities are on our side, period. End of discussion. And they're trying to get ahead of this stuff, probably something coming with Iran in a draft, is my opinion. They want to discredit any type of legitimate right-wing populism or white nationalism, because that's what they're trying to do, and they're using Patriot Front as a whipping rod. I mean, it's all over the place. You know, SPLC is funding. There's no evidence of that in any of these documents that the SPLC has ever given a dollar or has, you know, whatever's going on. Any of that most of those guys weren't even 17 years old when the SPLC weren't even 15 or 14 years old when the SPLC was in the report when the SPLC was funding this stuff. So I just want to know who all they gave six figures to. That's pretty wild. They were giving millions of dollars out to these different jokers, actually.
Well, look, partially, I'm going to talk about this on Friday night, but I think that's partially because, you know, you have to, you know, if you're the rat catcher and all of a sudden you're running out of rats to catch, you've got to maintain a business. So maybe you do keep a few rats in cages and distribute rat droppings around so you get a few more inquiries. You know, well, we found some rat droppings. Can you come and catch the non-existent rats? Because you put the droppings there. maybe that's what was going on. But I've always said this. Nationalism has been infested with people like this, especially British nationalism. And British nationalism has got a long history of having extremely high level activists and leadership class people eventually coming out and admitting that they worked for anti-nationalist or anti-fascist organizations. You know, Darren Wells from Combat 18, Ray Hill, who was in the BNP and the British movement, Tim Heppel, Andy Sykes, who famously helped get a journalist into the BNP, and he was the one that was one of the architects behind the charges against myself and Nick Griffin, where we were taken to court after the documentary The Secret Agent. These things are quite common. There is a lot of money in this for people. And shockingly, and I'm going to say this now, and I'm going to expand on this when I talk about this on Friday, but the majority of people who are spies or working for these outside organizations, they were people who came to nationalism. Matt Collins is another example. They came to nationalism, were genuine nationalists, and at some point, for money or for a way out, flipped and started taking financial incentives from organizations like the SPLC to snitch on their mates. It's a grim thing, but this is not something that, you know, has been fabricated, and it's absolutely in line with what's happened here in the UK. Some guy 14 gave $5, thank you so much, and said, is Tim working on new animations, maybe by using AI?
No comment. No, you never know.
I really hate AI. I really, really... I know it makes life easier for some people, but a lot of talented work now is going out the window. And when you go onto YouTube and places like that, or even on X, the amount of AI generated slop everywhere. And the fact that animators, cartoonists and designers are all basically now surplus to requirement because somebody can use an AI art generator it kind of sickens me. It kind of sickens me.
The thing about AI is that we're not in normal times. So running I'm having on Warren Baylog tonight at 6 p.m., which will be 11 p.m. your time, which everyone in the UK that's up should be watching, of course. A little plug. But Emily, to do an animation, to do Johnny Racist, to do a series or anything like that, for Emily, let's talk about Emily. She's had success with AI animation, which was really surprised me that it was that advanced. But it would take an enormous pipeline and an enormous amount of time to do those animations. It's very difficult for our side to do that successfully, continuously. It's just challenging. It's very expensive. It's extremely time consuming. We're not funded by Hollywood. You get the picture. And so she was able to use AI to that effect. And I think that's where AI can be used. I actually am not the biggest fan of AI either. But I do think we have to deal the hand we're dealt. And so yeah, using AI for various different things. And I think there will be disclaimers in the future when someone's using AI. And there will be a demand for people that don't use AI for things at the current rate. But I do think the situation we're in, if you are making something and you really can't get it made, it's going to be too expensive or too difficult, and you're making something for a cause, well, AI is certainly going to fill those gaps in. I still think there's always going to be demand for real art, but nonetheless, that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I don't like it. And I've got to say, when I started doing YouTube videos, there's a real art in producing a good video. And now you go on platforms and you are just absolutely inundated with AI documentaries, where 15 minutes of footage has been fed into, you know, AI, which is then being told to produce a 25-minute script, and it's repeating itself. AI shorts with the subtitles where AI has got them all wrong. I don't like it. I understand why people do it, because it allows them to churn out material and make a living. But I think it's something which, unfortunately, is going to lead to humanity going another step down the road of, unfortunately, not being able to do things, not being able to program anymore, not being able to write articles or produce anything. You know, at one time, people who designed websites would get paid good money for it. And there was a real skill to be able to design a good-looking, well-coded, well-optimized website. Now, just go on Wix, pretty much tell it what you want, and there, the website's in front of you. I know someone who designed their entire website branding and logo through Wix for maybe 50 quid. Well, at one point, that would earn a guy maybe £1,500-£2,000. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I don't like what's becoming of
really we can do about it. But I do agree. It's the things you can do with AI right now are, and every 6 months it appears to be more and more elaborate, are actually shocking.
Yeah. Baba 2 gave a really generous $50. Thank you so much. And said, David Whiteaxe, appreciates your work. I love your body of work. Your sacrifices, your commentary, and are of huge importance. The amazing guests you bring on. Hail Mark Collett. Well, thank you so much for your continued appreciation. It means a great deal to me. I can't thank you enough. The Bearded Indian gave $5, thank you so much, and said, politicians backing away are simply less vocal of their Judeo support. In reality, these politicians are still helping pass draconian laws that put us in jail for criticizing Jews. I think that's a very good point. I think that's what Tim said earlier, so thank you so much. Crafty Booms gave $14 and said, cheers. Well, thank you so much. Saxon Fjord became a new monthly subscriber. Thank you so much. Remember, on Rumble, you can become a subscriber. And look, if I had 400 or 500 subscribers every month, it would make a massive, look, it's $5, but it would mean far less worries for me. So thank you so much to those who become subscribers. Iggs22 gave $5, thank you so much, and said, I heard a random African from London on TikTok saying he hasn't worked for 5 years and claims everything on benefits. He said he does this because of the empire. Migrants cost us. They don't bring us a benefit. Do you know what always amazes me? And this really does amaze me. I know people that have fallen on hard times, like normal white guys who work normal jobs, and they've fallen on hard times. And these guys really struggle to claim benefits. They really struggle to get anything out of the state, and the state will always have an excuse not to give them anything. Well, we can't give you anything on this because you've got a mortgage. We can't give you anything on that because your wife earns too much. Well, we'd like to give you something for this, but you haven't been unemployed long enough. And then there's these people that arrive on a boat from somewhere without any paperwork, and they've been living here 5 years, essentially without a passport, without any documentation, without ever working, and are living comfortable lives. And it's almost like there's this, parallel dimension, like whites live in one dimension and then you're sort of non-whites live in this other dimension. It's just unbelievable how much aid these people get. It boggles my mind to how it happens. Hazelnut 3000 gave $10. Thank you so much. And said, thanks, Mark and Tim. Such a horrific topic. I remember the baby P case traumatized me for years and still unbearable to think about. Yeah, the baby P case was another horrific case of a little boy, killed by parents or those in charge of looking after him. These things, they happen far, far too often. And Britain seems to be a bit of a hotspot for it, to be honest. And Tim, I wanted to ask you, actually, going back to the last question, talking of migrants into America, is the migrant benefit pipeline such a big thing in America? Because in America, we generally hear that most of the undocumented migrants do actually end up working in some sort of low-paid industry or endeavor. Or is there this kind of like migrants to benefit pipeline that exists in the UK?
It's not as upfront. The elaborate pipeline isn't as upfront as it is in the UK. I mean, you're not exactly, unless you have refugee status or something, you're not necessarily getting the same type of five-star treatment. It's kind of like done in other ways. It really depends on the particular migrant as well. For instance, if you were to go to the hospital in America, you're going to get charged a lot of money. But migrants, a lot of times, can get away with doing it for free. It's on the taxpayer dime. They don't necessarily have insurance cards unless they're on some kind of Medicaid at the state level, something at the local level. But as far as food stamps and this type of thing, that really depends on the state. Like a state like California, they can get all kinds of elaborate assistance and no one will ever ask a question. Now, there are other states that have started cracking down on that. So I guess the question, it would be on a state-by-state basis. Now, let me give you an example. Tennessee was passing a law or wanted to pass a law, meaning that if you're going to get any type of state aid at all, they want a CID and they want to make sure you're in the country legally. So there is a lot of people on various different types of welfare, state funding, Section 8, whatever, that are illegals, that are here illegally. And Bonvino or Greg Bonvino, he was the former head. He was the one strutting around there and supposedly deporting people. He's come out in the last week saying that there's 100 million illegals in America that he wanted to get out. So he was like Trump's border czar guy. They certainly do. It's just not, it's a totally different system. And it can be different state by state. We don't have a good handle on the actual numbers. Somewhere like California, it would be enormous, the amount of money spent on illegals. Other states, it might not be, probably not as bad, just depending. I'd be curious to see if any states actually, like Tennessee, the Carolinas, pass any particular bills making it very difficult for illegals to get any type of state aid, which obviously it should. So it's not, it can be difficult for us to track because it has to be done on a state-by-state basis. I would have to look at white papers to see if white papers has actually done a number because California, we probably have some better idea than any other state simply because in California, it really doesn't matter where you're from. You can get all the same benefits as everyone else. And you can get benefits in California a lot easier than many other states, supposedly.
Well, in the UK, it's kind of odd because it's not just the benefits that you get in terms of money, housing, etc., but it's the added money that's spent upon you. So if you're a migrant and you can't speak English, they will give you an interpreter. If you go to the council offices, they'll give you an interpreter if you go to the doctors or to a hospital. Now, these interpreters are not cheap. You know, you're probably looking about 150 quid an hour. So if you're an immigrant and you end up in the council offices and you're trying to apply for something, and you've got an interpreter sat with you for 2 hours. Well, you know, and you don't know if these people charge a minimum fee as well of sort of half a day. So you could end up with costs of £300 to £600 for an interpreter to come out and see you. And it's the same in hospitals. I know somebody who had their second child at Leicester Royal Infirmary. And they told me that on many occasions when they saw the nurses and doctors doing their rounds, they were accompanied by an interpreter. So not only do these people get things like free healthcare, which you can't initially put a price upon, but they also get the interpreter as well. So when you total it up, the amount of money is truly obscene. And obviously, it's generally the white taxpayer that covers that. Poit gave $25 and simply said donation. Well, thank you so much for your continued generosity. And Scaredy Cat gave $8 and said, hi, Tim and Mark, best wishes. That's all the super chats tonight. If you haven't super chatted and you'd like to make a bit of a difference, please consider doing so. It means a lot to me. And if you can help me out, I would appreciate it. We've got one more super chat that's come in for $1. Thank you so much. It's from Appalachia Invicta. And it says, you dislike Israel because you think it's genociding brown Palestinians. I dislike Israel because it's a safe haven from which Jewish power is projected to white nations. We are not the same. well, I think you're kind of wrong there. I dislike Israel because of both of those reasons. You see, this is interesting.
Supporting genocide makes people look a little like crazy.
Look,
I mean, we're not in a Mad Max society yet.
Supporting
some kind of lawless wild animal running around wiping people out willy nilly.
Look,
there's lots of reasons to be critical of Israel across the board. You don't have to be critical of them for just, there's enormous numbers of reasons. For instance, the financial crimes that get hidden up there. You know, there's pedophiles escaping America that end up there. So on and so forth, et cetera.
Look, I've got to say, if I was going to give you the top five reasons why I dislike Israel, you know, I could give you really five really good reasons, but none of them are mutually exclusive. I hate the way Israel involves itself in our foreign domestic policies. I hate the way Israel distorts our elections. I hate the way Israel sponsors terrorism in the Middle East. I hate the way Israel is the global center of organ and body part trafficking. I hate the way that Israel is used as a bolt hole by criminals and the way it spies upon Western nations. I hate the way that Israel uses men like Jeffrey Epstein to do the most sickening thing to white girls as a way of manipulating white
nations. And everything happening in southern Lebanon, the Israelis would do it where Mark's neighborhood or my neighborhood or your neighborhood, they're not mutually exclusive, the things they're doing. For instance, prisoners, the horrific things that they do torturing prisoners. This isn't mutually exclusive from the Bolshevik Revolution. It isn't mutually exclusive from what they do to us if they had some type of Bolshevik Revolution in the UK or America. We all know this. So there's lots of reasons across the board to be opposed to them.
Yeah, he's just clarified and said it was just a quote, but I just want to make it clear. Like, there are people who come in my comments and say silly things like Marx a third worldist, just because I don't want to see Muslim babies blown to pieces in places like Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon. I think I'm a very human person, and I I genuinely extend nationalism to every nation. You know, I want the Afghans to control Afghanistan. I want the Palestinians to control Palestine. I want the Japanese to control Japan, and I want the English to control England. You know, the Germans to control Germany. I believe nationalism is a coherent world view, not a white supremacist view.
Yeah, Israel wants to control Israel, and they want to push everything else anywhere they can. Especially exactly. The West. So that's the problem. That people have to have a home to stay in, and they're busy blowing those up.
Yeah, and I do think that it's important that we are consistent. Draven J gave $50. Thank you so much. He says, keep doing what you're doing. I haven't caught a live for a while, but I usually catch the replay. Well, thank you so much for your generosity. What a lovely, generous super chat to end on. I want to just say, if you haven't super chatted and you're watching on replay, please do hit the button over on Entropy and give something. It does mean a lot. Times are difficult at the moment. You know, I said donations are down across the board, obviously because we're going through the sort of turmoil we're going through. But please do consider doing something. I'm not charging anyone for anything, but if everyone chipped in a little bit, it'd make a great difference. But thank you to those who did. Tim, have the final say, my friend. You've been a wonderful guest and a great friend. It's really, really good to have you on. You're one of those people that I like to have on every sort of 3 months. It's been longer than 3 months this time. You do a lot of really good work for this community, and I can't underscore enough just how highly I think of you.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. I'll be live on Rumble and some other places like Odyssey at 6 p.m. with Warren Baylog tonight, and you guys can tune into that. I'm live typically Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday around 5:30 p.m. Eastern. So 10:30 in the UK.
Well, thank you so much. Please do support Tim any way you can. Thank you. Oh, we've got one last super chat. Thank you so much from Unfiltered Anglo, who gave a fiver. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mark. Where do I find the self-improvement community group I've heard you speak about before? I've just fallen out of my six-day training routine I had locked in after being ill for a week. Email me, mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Get involved with PA. Get involved in the fitness group. I'll get you in touch with them all. Email me. Remember, if you need help, just email me. I'm here for you all. That's a promise. I just want to thank everyone who donated so generously tonight. Remember, if any of you do need me, reach out. I'd like to thank Tim. I'd like to thank everyone who tuned in. Remember, I'll be back on Friday and Sunday for new streams. My Substack is up, and there'll be a new Substack article out on Saturday. I am endeavoring to put out one piece of content per day, either in written format or in terms of me being on a stream or a show, whether it be my own or a guest appearance. Please, please do support me if you can. I am there in multiple places. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. Please tune in for the book review on Sunday with Sam, for my stream about the SPLC on Friday. And check out my Substack, because there'll be a new article out on Saturday. Thank you so much to you all. I love this community. I'm so happy to be able to serve you in the way I do. I hope you'll be back with me, because I'll be back on Wednesday for another episode of Patriotic Weekly Review. Until then, thank you. I love you all, and good night.